We're the Pragmatic Doulas.
This is a podcast where we talk all about birth and other interesting things.
Birth may be a goddess, but she doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want incense. She wants
common sense.
Hello.
Hello.
And good morning to y'all. Wherever y'all happen to be.
Yeah. Who are you?
Me, I'm Suzanne. Don't you know? I'm Suzanne. And today I'm just settling into having people in my house who usually are not here. My son and his wife have arrived from the Philippines and they're just working off their jet lag right now. Yep.
And you're all smiles, I'm sure.
Mostly smiles.
What's that?
Mostly smiles.
Mostly smiles?
Mm-hmm.
Smiles and blankets.
Yep.
My house smells like wet dog right now because I insisted my dogs leave the posh pet center and get in my car while they were still damp so that I could get back here to podcast with you two. What are you doing, Kim?
Mm. Well, I'm Kim. That was Stephanie, for those that have not heard us before. I'm alone in my house for the first time in 18 months, and it's nice. It's really nice.
Did you streak through naked?
No, I haven't been here that long.
Maybe after the podcast, you can do it.
No, because then I got to go pick up kids and do other things now. Oh, school ends at 2:45. What the?
Oh. Yeah, I work some naked time in there.
Eh.
Okay, well, we're glad that we're here today on this lovely, lovely Friday afternoon in our part of Ontario. So I am going to read a land acknowledgement for us. And here it is. So us, you know who we are. We're the Pragmatic Doulas, and we acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and that this land is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples. The Pragmatic Doulas, that's us, we also acknowledge that this land that we're on, basically the City of Toronto, is covered by Treaty 13, which was signed with the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Williams Treaties, that was signed with multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands. We do a land acknowledgement every single episode, not as a performative act, but as a statement recognizing the past, and most importantly, as encouragement for all of us to move forward in the spirit of reconciliation. Thanks for listening.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, what's going on in the world today? What's going on in everybody's lives? Oh, I know. Who watched the debates last night?
Nope. I did not. I did not have the stomach for it. I wanted to gather myself and then go back and watch it when it wasn't live. Because I know that there's going to be some people I need to move through and not listen to. And so, yes.
Your stomach couldn't handle the live.
I could not.
Right. What about you, Kim? You didn't watch it?
No, I don't have any intention of watching it.
So for our American listeners, we are in the middle, pretty much, of an election campaign. A federal election campaign. So we are about to get a new prime minister, or not, as the case may very well be. And we have debates here, just like I know they do in the States. But my son was pointing out to me that the political news in the States is far more exciting because the media makes it exciting. When you watch CNN, I never do, but the few times that I've watched it, they have like music, da, 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 like suspense music. They have drums leading up to a news story and all of that. They rile up your emotions. Canadian politics just doesn't do that. It is really and truly about politics. And then there's a little bit of room for personalities to shine through, which is what I watch the debates for. Even though I pretty much already have my mind made up, the debates definitely didn't sway me at all. As a matter of fact, the person that I absolutely am not voting for, I think performed the best last night. In terms of steadiness, calmness, presentation of issues. They did all of those things better than any of the other candidates, but I'm not voting for that person because policies, that's what matters, policies. So I stayed up. I was pretty beat up by the end of it because it's long and it's late. And that's way past my bedtime.
Yeah. That's interesting to hear that that someone did hold calm. I wonder if they took something beforehand. But I mean, no one really gets railing, screaming loud at these things either. So, you know, we talk about things being big and exciting and stuff. No one, you know, sometimes we're mopping a brow and things like that, but it's not often that people lose their minds the way they do in a US debate. Like, you feel like someone's come for their mother sometimes with the reactions you get, or the sarcasm too. I don't have space for sarcasm and I don't have space for rhetoric and stuff. I would actually rather go back. I understand their platforms or I understand their policies, but then and those two things usually land somewhere in the middle when you actually go look how their party voted on certain things in the past. So, because you can say you're for one thing, and then your party doesn't actually vote in support of that eventually. And it kind of squeaks by nice and quiet. So I like to kind of go and see how the actual vote came through. And that goes for voting, because sometimes you're going to vote for a party because of what they're representing, like locally, even though federally you're not in support of what they're standing for.
Yeah, that's hard because I kind of like the MP that I have now, but I don't have any intention of voting for that party this time around. And that's, I'm feeling a little bit of that pull. So, and that we have to face it. If your MP is somebody that you like, but they belong to a party that you don't like, or vice versa. I like a certain party, but I'm not thrilled about my local candidate for that party. Then what do you do? So I guess we just boil it down to, when it's a federal election, vote for the prime minister.
Yes.
If it's a provincial election, vote for the premier. Who do you want to be premier? Who do you want to be prime minister? And usually they will back up the party policies. And that's the most important thing, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Speaking of policies or current events, and again, for our American listeners, I was just mentioning to Kim, I just heard, because I don't have like cable TV, I'm not up on the news all the time. So I heard on TikTok, that's where I get my news from, that the Justice Department of the United States is bringing suit against the state of Texas for their ridiculous abortion bans that they've instituted or whatever you want to call it. Did you hear about that?
I'm glad to hear it.
You hadn't heard about that, Steph?
I heard about what was going on in Texas. I hadn't heard about them rising up against it. But yeah. I'm glad to hear it. I'm very glad to hear it.
Yeah. Somehow or another, I fell into some conversations on some social media, I don't even remember where there were a lot of Texans on there defending that legislation. And I don't know, I'm so ensconced in my own world. I'm thinking that everybody agrees with me and everybody believes what I believe. And I was like, no, no, no. I was reminded quite strongly that no, there are people who absolutely do not believe in a woman's right to choose, a person's right to choose what happens to their body and whether a pregnancy continues and your right to terminate a pregnancy if you choose to. Yeah, no, there's a lot of people in support of it. And I don't know enough about how.
At least I know it's not me that's frozen. So having had attended an abortion, sorry, Suzanne, you kind of froze up there. But I was just to fill the space. I was just going to say, you know, having attended an abortion, a termination, at many, many weeks. I mean, I think it might've been 32, 34. it was not an easy decision to come to. Like this family was not, it wasn't like, oh yeah, yeah, whatever. It's a hard decision to make, and I shouldn't have, you know, old white guys up in my business helping me make that decision or taking that decision away from me as someone with a uterus.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Sorry, I'm in my room because my house is crowded and I don't want to go down to the living room, which means that my internet is going to maybe possibly chip in and out a little bit.
Okay.
So yeah, please be ready to jump in to fill in the cracks. But I've read a lot about people saying, oh, you know, it's a really hard decision. It's difficult. I can imagine that situation that you were in, Kim, was horrendous to make that decision and to go through with that. Sometimes it's easy to make a decision to terminate a pregnancy, though. And those people have the right to make that decision too. And they need support. Sometimes you immediately see that pregnancy, that positive test result, and you know, oh, hell no, I cannot and will not do this. And it is not a hard decision to pick up the phone and make a call to the clinic. People often make abortion out to be this heavy, grievous process that a person carries for the rest of their life. And that is true in many cases, but it's not true in all cases. That's sometimes true. Decision is easy and you do it and you feel immense relief and happiness. And you walk away from that clinic and you carry on with your business, and that's okay.
And you are thankful that you were able to
do that
without jumping through hoops. And it needed to be that way. You know, we shouldn't have to require of people that they prove why they need to do it. You know, none of these things. We really just need to stand in solidarity with the person who's making that decision. And if they feel they need additional support or they need additional therapy because it has been a really long, hard road for them, then they're entitled to that. And if they're a person who just immediately knew, I cannot do this, and they need to be done with it and move on with their life, then we need to support that too. There should not be hoops to jump through.
It's almost as if sometimes people make the, like it's a price. Yes, 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 yes. You have the right to make a decision to have an abortion, but you really need to feel bad about it afterwards. It really needs to be emotionally grievous for you in order to justify this horrible thing that you've done. And that's what always gets my goat, because no, sometimes it's an easy decision to make. No, sometimes people are just relieved and glad that it's over and done. And yes, sometimes people move away and walk away from that and they leave it behind them. And 20, 30 years later, no, they're not crying and lighting candles for that situation. It's just something that happened in the past, and that's it. And that's okay too. All experiences in this realm are okay. So anyways, that's just current events. That's what's on my mind this morning, because I just heard that announcement from the Justice Department. And I really feel for the people of Texas, potentially pregnant people of Texas, who may find themselves in a situation where they need to terminate a pregnancy and they are 7 weeks pregnant. And woohoo, look at that. You're too late. Too late. Uber drivers who are driving you to the clinic, feel for them too. Anybody who has any hand.
Did you hear that Lyft is going to pay the legal fees of any drivers that are penalized or arrested for driving anybody?
Yes.
For that, and donated $1 million to Planned Parenthood.
Fucking love Lyft.
Yeah,
I really do. When my kids need a ride, I call Lyft. I don't call Uber. I don't even have an Uber app on my phone. I have the Lyft app for those situations where it might happen. Yes, yes, that's awesome. That's the kind of big corporate support that situations like this need. So,
yeah.
Either of you have any highlights, corrections, current event things that you noticed in the media?
Nothing happened in the last week since we recorded.
Nothing's has it even
been wearing the same shirt.
Wearing the same shirt. Yeah. Yeah. True. Okay. So nothing for you, Steph?
Nothing. I mean, I'm happy I have tiles in my house. That's about the extent of my excitement over here. I have tiles in my bathrooms.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. What did you have before? Just like subfloor or
subfloor.
Whatever.
Now I have tiles and one bathtub.
Okay. Excellent. You are undergoing a big reno.
Yes, I am. But it is nearly complete now. This is like the last stretch. Once the tiles start going down, everything goes quick, and I'm going to have bathrooms very soon. All will well, I am manifesting 1 week until completion.
1 week. Okay. Make it a mantra.
Make it my mantra.
Yes. Yes. Beautiful. So we do have a topic today.
We do, and I'm excited for it because, boy, has it been on my mind.
Really? Well, that's good. Hopefully you'll have like a lot of shit to say and share. So this week we're talking about, huh?
Then what is it, Suzanne?
Okay. This week we're talking about client load. Client load. That means how many clients do you carry? Can you carry? Should you carry over the course of a month, I guess, like most dealers count their client load according to due dates per month, right? How many, so I would like for us to talk about all of that. How many do you carry? How many ideally do you want to carry? And how many should you carry? Like according to comfort level and plain and simple manageability, what factors affect your client load? And what did you use to decide on that client load? Like, I want to talk about all of that stuff. And also, has your client load changed over your career? Like, what was it like? What was your client load like at the beginning of doing this? And what's it like now? And why has it changed? All of that. I want to wade into all of those thoughts, right? So let's start with talking about your ideal client load. What is your ideal client load? And I also think it's important for us to differentiate between birth clients and postpartum clients, because they're carrying, you know, it's not the same thing. You might be able to do a lot of one and not so much of the other. So that needs to be mentioned too. So let's start with Kim. What is your ideal client load?
Okay, so given that I only do virtual stuff now, my client load can be a lot different than it would be if I was doing in-person. Because if I was doing in-person, I mean, I think I'd be pretty good with one a month, because I don't think my body would be able to manage more than one a month.
Yeah.
But now that it's virtual, my ideal would be, so let's see, I mean, if we shoot for the stars, if the heavens are listening, I would do 3 birth clients a month and have 4 of the parent mentoring that I do, like the 1 week parent mentoring clients that I do.
Yeah.
Cause really a lot of that, it can be done sitting right over there on that chair where my ass has been imprinted. So, it actually sags now. It's very sad. But yeah, I think that would be my ideal. I mean, as I think about it, I think, oh, maybe that's a lot, but you know what? I'd love to give it a try.
Yes. Yes. It's like winning the lottery. People say, you know, it ruins your life. Well, I'd be the exception to the rule. I really do. Give me that 60 million. I'll show you how to do it properly.
Let's test that theory.
Yeah. So 3 birth clients and 4 parenting mentors.
Yeah.
Parent mentor clients. So that's like 7 clients.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds rich, full and rich. It does. That's ideally what you're doing. That's ideally what you want to do.
Yeah. It's not what I'm doing, but it's what I'd want to do.
Yes.
Right now I have one client and no parent mentoring.
Got it.
So my bank account weeps.
How about you? And I mean, yeah, so this is I'm not talking about how many clients you're carrying all together right now, but ideally how many you would have per month. Like as you move into, as you stepped into September, what would have been perfect for you to have this load that you would have, Steph?
As I come into September, I'm at the place I am in my life right now. If I could line it up, it's exactly what it is. It's two clients a month that are birth specific, and each of
those in-person birth,
in-person births, two in-person births. Mm-hmm. And the both of them have requested three additional breastfeeding support visits afterwards. So that was part of our discussions about what support would look like for these families. And they are both, as I come into, I'm in September right now, one of them have already birthed and they are, and that I am so thankful for. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
Two births with additional breastfeeding support and separate clients. I have about four other people who want to work with me after the babies come in regards to breastfeeding support. Mm-hmm. That's also in person, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
However, I cannot ignore how coming out of COVID has impacted that two a month, which seems really low because there was a time when I took four or five a month many, many, many moons ago.
Mm-hmm.
My body doesn't feel the same. It's like going from 0 to 100 really quickly. So my body doesn't feel as strong. And I'm having this sense of uncertainty, although I have a solid backup and such. This, the waiting game, the, you know, on call part where you're,
oh yeah,
is giving me a sense of the nerves that I've never experienced before.
Uh-huh.
I've had the little irritation of the on and off type things. You know, we've all had it where we have to consider it while we're making other plans and stuff, and everything of course comes with caveat of unless I'm at a birth. But this actually is creating like sensations in my body of like I'm overthinking, I'm over worrying about something that in the end is never in my control.
Yes.
And many moons ago, again, I understood it was not in my control. So I could not give that energy but I can't seem to shake it off as easily this time.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I'm at two births a month, but I started fantasizing the other day about one client a month. I'm like, then I'm not going to be in that crossover, having to call a backup thing, but anytime you might have to. But I'm like, how do I lessen that feeling? Do I run away from it and just go to one client a month? But that doesn't feel right either. So client load for me has to meet the criteria of not being over invasive for my family, which is why I went from prior at 4 to 5 clients a month, and missing more things with my family and being too, as I got a little older, being a little too tired to fully be present with my kids and my family when I am here. And it was more challenging for my husband when I'm up and running out of the house, even though he's happy to just get up and carry on with whatever the things are with the kids. The actual waking up and disruption of our schedule is challenging. So that's how I came down to a month. But now I'm like, do I rejig it again? Do I change things up again? I'm not sure. But right now, on paper, two births a month, 3 to 4 breastfeeding clients a month feels really good.
Excellent. My ideal has changed drastically from the beginning, because that's going to be my next question. How has that ideal changed for you over the course of your career? And the more I'm listening to us, the more I'm thinking maybe we need to rename our podcast the Senior Doula Podcast, because I actually think that it's really good for new doulas to, or doulas who've only been in this for a few years, to listen to this and hear that things do change over time. Actually, they do. What your ideals are, there's absolutely no way I could maintain the same ideal I used to have. So currently, my ideal would be I'm going to pretend for 1 second that I'm still doing in-person births because I kind of still am. I made a almost solid decision that after the end of the year, I'm not going to do that anymore, but I do have some commitments to fulfill right up until the end of the year. So if we're talking in-person births, I have been ideally doing one birth a month for a very long time. And that started as a result of me teaching on weeknights and weekends, and having more than one birth a month was so nerve-wracking that I said, I can't do it. So I went down to one birth a month while I was teaching, doing weeknight teaching and weekend teaching. And I've kept it at that for a very long time. So one in-person birth a month, I ideally, if in person, could do two postpartum clients, because I would do one 4-hour shift with one client maybe a couple times a week, and one postpartum shift with another client maybe once or twice a week also. And that kept me, plus teaching, that kept me nice and busy and full. That was good. Because also Kim and I are childbirth educators, and we have to consider our classes and how going to a birth might clash with that. So that's a consideration too. Those are the factors that influence your other work, influences how many clients you have. New doulas who have young children often think that that's the factor, that it's childcare and so on. And it is in those days, but other things, as your career grows and changes, other things will come into play too. So I went from having many clients a month, like 4 birth clients, to 1, because I took on other birth work, different birth work that impacted that. I also would love if I could get some more doula mentoring going. I have done 0 to promote it and market it. So the fact that I don't have any doula mentees right now is makes total sense, because I haven't been doing anything to attract anybody to me. But if I had a couple of serious mentees, that would make me happy. Right now, if we're talking virtual, I would be thrilled to have 4 virtual birth support clients, 2 or 3 postpartum clients, maybe another, throw in a breastfeeding support person there, and again, a couple of doula mentees. That would suit me just fine. That would keep me on this damn computer a lot, but that's okay. I would feel productive and it would feel manageable because everything would be virtual. So if everything's virtual, that's my ideal. Yeah. I still love doing prenatals. I still love doing prenatal virtual meetings with clients, and having supported several virtual births during 2020, I like it. I really, really like it. So that is my new ideal. Yeah.
Maybe Steph, for you, that could be part of the compromise. Maybe you do have 1 in person and 1 virtual, in which case that virtual one doesn't add to your stress levels, but it still gets you involved in, you know, another birth per se. But I don't know if that, you know, I'm probably speaking out of turn, but, you know, I know it's hard to not see the babies born. I know that part's really hard for some people. And I don't know if that's sort of where you might be sitting.
Is it? The babies being born, sitting with a family, like I love the being in person part. I do.
Yeah.
It's like once I'm at the birth, I'm gold. You know, it's really the part that feels heavy is the leading up to it. Right.
Yes. That's
the issue with me anyway, and I don't know if that's just like a mental health issue or if it really is a balance, or if it's just like my body and brain getting used to it again, because we've been virtual for so long.
Okay. Yeah,
you're right. I really did enjoy virtual work before COVID, you know, when families would want to have their parent and their partner there, and they just wanted basically a go-to, kind of like a parenting mentor. It was like a laboring mentor. You know, we want to have the access to the information without having but have it just be family at the birth. We just kind of didn't call it anything for a while other than, what if I want to have my mom? Well, you still got to hire me and in order to have access to me. And we finally kind of put digital doula on it. And I really enjoyed that. I really did enjoy that. I think I don't enjoy it feeling like a compromise. You know what I mean? Like having the ability to attend people or not attend and people really, for those who wanted that one-to-one support, that really put a twist in my gut. And I understood why, I understood all the whys and stuff. It just didn't make it any less hard to not do it.
Yes.
So, and all of us, we are making these, deciding on our workload is very personal on what's going on in our families at the time, being able to pivot, being able to pull in other, you know, skills that we have in order to make our income so that we can pay our bills. But do you guys have any feelings around what a max workload, quote unquote, should be for a doula?
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions too. Do we have any judgy feelings about what other people do with their workload?
Yes.
yes. Yes. Do we have judgy feelings? Of course we fucking do.
That's the only kind of feelings worth having. It's hard for me to put a number on that because you were saying, you know, based on everybody's family structure, it's more than just family structure. I'm finding now, it isn't just about what's happening in my household with the people who live here. It's also what's happening in the world because hello, COVID completely rearranged our ability to work the way that we used to. And we've all had to find a new way to work. And that includes how many clients we take on. It also has to do with physical health. This is a lot to do with my aching back and my feet killing me when I go to an 18-hour birth. And that is affecting how many clients I want to take on and my mental health. My emotional energy tank feels super low at this moment. Maybe in a year or two, it'll change, but right now it feels emotional. I feel very emotionally low. And so that's hard for me to feel, to give to other people. So there's a lot of factors. So it is hard. It would be hard for me to say, well, you or any new doula within the first year of starting this, you should only take X amount of clients because whatever, whatever, but maybe you guys have specific reasons behind those that I'm just not thinking about. Tell me your judgy feelings. I love them.
I'm happy to offer my judgy feelings. And I can tell you why I have the judgy feelings too.
Yeah.
It actually wasn't birth related. It was postpartum related where I had this experience and it made me wonder about some doulas who take a very big, heavy workload. So first, postpartum, I had two different people who I was working with as a birth doula mentioned to me that they were working with a particular postpartum doula they'd hired. And initially I was like, great, until I'd heard I saw this particular doula advertising that, you know, they had space here, 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 and here. And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense because I know they just signed with these two people for big, big blocks. And they signed, they're currently working with someone that I know because I know this particular person. So what they were doing is they were loading themselves with the deposit, with the retainer fee, having no intention of actually attending the family and then paying a backup doula significantly less to go.
So,
they weren't actually planning on going themselves. They were planning on booking people and then booking another doula to actually go. And that's what happened with both of those clients. And so when a third client said, hey, I just saw this, you know, Facebook ad or whatever pop up for this person, I'm thinking of interviewing with them, I had to stop that person and say, you know, don't do that because you're due at the same time as someone else. And I know they just booked 4 weeks of care. And so this isn't actually about how an individual can load their client thing. Like, don't be that person. Maybe that's what I'm saying. Don't be the person who books people with the intention of sending a backup.
Whoa, that is a sneaky, slimy scam that I had never thought of.
Yeah, yes. That's underhanded.
And so since that time, and that was about 10 years ago, since that time, I've seen a couple birth doulas do the same thing. And and then what was ended up happening through kind of like word of mouth complaints was that they were sending they were booking as an experienced doula and then sending very inexperienced doulas. So families weren't happy with that. And as the backup, it became obvious for a short period of time, and I haven't seen this continue, but for a short period of time that was their intention. And then a couple of these younger doulas were saying, I feel like I'm getting paid half the price to actually be on call, to actually go, because I'm always being called.
Yeah. So two people were getting screwed in that, the parents and the doula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's super shitty.
So when you're looking to book your, what I recommend is when you're looking to book your calendar, do it with the intention of attending and not heavily relying.
Yeah.
On a backup.
Yes.
Because I have a backup. It's like, no, how many, if you didn't have a backup and they all went on different days, how many do you feel you could manage in a month? Assuming everyone had like a different due date, how many in a month could you strategically do so that your body felt well? I feel that should be the guideline for how many you choose to book.
You see, that person that you're speaking about had no intention of actually doing the work. So we're talking about client load. How much work can you actually manage to do? They had no intention of doing the work. They only wanted to sign up as many clients as possible to collect retainer fees and then have somebody else do the work for a much lower price. So in that case, you can have unlimited client load if you're doing that, running that scam.
Right. Wow. So I also recommend that people don't find that slippery slope to even thinking too much about, well, I can take this many because I have a backup who can go if I can't. So it's like, it should really be, how many can I book that I would feel comfortable attending? If like physically, emotionally, lifestyle, all of those things, then if two go at the same time, you have a backup. But don't do it assuming I can book one every month or one every day of the month if I want, because I have a backup just in case. Because then you and your backup would just be run ragged. What can you do comfortably, assuming you can attend all of them?
See, I never even thought, I'm so naive. Those things never even occurred to me. Sometimes I think that I'm like really smart and underhanded, but I'm fucking not. That didn't even occur to me. I'm here, my mind is blown. I'm like, people do that? What the fuck? Wow.
That's because you have a heart.
I've been doing this for 18 years and it never occurred to me. Not even what you just said, a little bit less slimy, but still not smart, where you overbook you overbook clients knowing that you got backup and that whatever, I could just use my backup to cover these two extra clients that I really wouldn't be able to do on my own. That never occurred to me.
No.
Boy, fuck, I'm in the wrong job. Or maybe I'm in the right job. Because yeah, clients don't deserve that. Right job,
but I'm
clients deserve honest doulas. Yeah. So what's your judgy thoughts, Kim?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's the same people that Susan or that Stephanie's talking about, but I mean, I certainly knew of doulas, you know, years ago that, that would book, you know, like 7 or 8 clients a month.
Mm-hmm.
And think, how is that even possible? Like, how can you even do that? And with the idea that that client hired you, like that client connected with you, you had something in you that they wanted to have at their birth, but there's no way that you could attend every single one of those births. And it's like, even if you're like physically fit, you know, mentally capable of doing all that stuff, I'm just not sure it's physically possible to do it. And you would have to call in a backup for at least one or two of them. So again, you're knowing you've sold yourself to this person to this birthing parent at one of the most incredibly vulnerable, intimate times of their lives, knowing damn well that you're not going to be there.
Yes.
Like, I look at that and go, wow, you're shit. Like, that
signing clients up with the foreknowledge that you're not going to be there. Like that, that's the real gutter work.
That's mind blowing. We also have to consider too, like, and I'm sure this is probably one of the questions you're going to ask too. Like, it's not just that you're attending the birth. Like, that's maybe, let's say you take four clients a month. So that's 420, let's go extra, 424-hour periods where you're going to be there. Plus, you know, a day or two recovery on top of that. Plus two prenatal visits, plus potentially two or three postnatal visits, depending on what you do. Yep. Plus all the phone interaction and, you know, texts, email, and things like that, and all that stuff. Plus all the advertising and marketing that you have to do, and social media and putting yourself out there for the next month to get clients and all of that. Like,
don't forget the interviews.
Oh, and all the, you know, maybe four, five, consults, six, and interviews. Eight interviews that you have to do to as
keep
well.
Keep up that, if you're trying to keep that level going. And as a sole proprietor doula, how is it possible?
I'm exhausted just thinking about all of that.
You need to be you would have to be like an agency or working in a collective or in partnership with somebody else. And that's a different thing. That is a different thing, because if you have that set up, a collective, an agency, or in collaboration with other doulas or whatever, your intention at the beginning is to do the work that comes at the end. That's your intention. But if you're loading yourself up with 6, 7, 8 clients a month, and it's just you, you're not fucking going. You're not doing all of that shit that you just listed.
Yep.
You're just not, all by yourself every single month. Fuck off. Yeah. If that's true, if you are running a doula business like that, 8 clients a month, and you are able to do it and do it well, write us an email. We want to have you on the show, because you're magic. You're magic. And we want to know what your doula magic is. Cause that's, I remember somebody saying to me that they had four birth clients a month. And I was like, whoa, how do you do that? That just seems like a lot. And that I'm sure I've said it to you guys before or on the podcast. And she goes, well, this is what I feed. This is my career. It's my job. It's all I do. And it's how I feed my kids. Like, that's how I keep a roof over our heads, because that is all they were doing. That doula was not doing postpartum work, not doing breastfeeding support, not teaching classes and all the other things that we all do. Straight up 4 births a month. And 4 births a month is still different from even 5. Add one more and it all could just fucking go to hell. If you are able, and I can imagine in my mind, I wasn't actually even thinking about attending 4 births a month. The fact is that you can't schedule it. If I was guaranteed that every Friday, only Fridays, I could go to a birth, I could do 4 births a month. I mean, if my body could hold up, I mean, but in terms of stress, if you knew, if you could schedule births, it is the unpredictability of the nature of birth that makes that stress. And that also influences how many clients you're going to take. So if I knew that births only happened on Fridays, absolutely, I could take 4 births a month. If I knew, you know, if I knew that they happened on Tuesdays and Fridays, I could take 8 clients a month.
Exactly.
But because birth is not, fuck, you have one client due on the 5th, one on the 27th, and you figure you're good. Until the 5th goes on the 15th, and the 27th goes on the 16th. And now you got back-to-back births, and you're broken. And you're broken.
100%.
So right?
I can tell you guys that when I first started out with my primary backup, Mary, that's what I did. I did 4 to 5 clients a month. Mm-hmm. And she did 3 clients a month. And strangely, I used to, so I would always let my clients know when I was heading to a birth. Anyone within a 2-week window, I would just say, hey guys, heading out to a birth. still available by phone if something comes up. If not, contact Mary. Here's your number. And it was so peculiar that back then I did not have that same sensation in my stomach that I get now. I don't know, again, if it's age, if age has aged my brain and anxiety and nerve level. But back then it was just what I did. I did two prenatals in person. And back then I used to do them in the evenings after Roger came home. Or if my ex would just take all the heathens. And and I would just go do it. And I had the emotional energy and it did not feel draining. So back then I could do it and I rarely missed a birth. I would.
But you were working in collaboration with that person.
They had a steady backup.
You could say, if anybody needs me while I'm at this birth, call so-and-so.
Yes.
You were working, you had that backup collaboration. So imagine going into that birth and carrying all those other clients with you in your head thinking, oh shit. Well, you know, so-and-so is due in 3 days or whatever.
So choosing client load, when we talk about choosing client load, I assume everyone is choosing their client load with the consideration that they have a backup. Not a backup to, like, you know, pass your clients off on, so to speak, but if two people go at the same time, you have backup. We've talked about this before, the absolute importance of not letting your ego run this job. You always need a backup, always, because you never know. Act of God, your kid is barfing and shitting at the same time and you can't go, you need a backup. You know, like, you need,
or you are barfing and shitting at the same time.
Hello.
We've all had that. Yes, we have. You know? Yeah. So my assumption is that while you're building this, you're building it with the assumption you have a good backup, not again to necessarily share the load, like you're not sharing clients, but that if you're at a birth, someone is there to step up. You have someone who's consistent.
So it's almost worth it to say to new doulas who are listening, that before you pour all your energy into getting to scoring up clients, which I know is like the big, you know, when you're a new doula, that's your big thing. How do I get clients? How do I get clients? What you need to do is build relationships with the doula community around you, build a solid backup base, and that will influence, that will impact how many clients you really ought to take safely and comfortably. I mean, if you're used to living in a high stress situation, good for you. We obviously are not. We don't recommend that. And to answer your question, Stephanie, like, I don't know if it's age or whatever. I am going to say, I'm going to make an executive comment and say 100% it's absolutely age. This new feeling that you're feeling, this uncertainty that you're feeling, and I'm not talking about the fact that your body is aged. That's definitely a part of it, but it's not just that. It's just that aren't you staring down the gullet of 50, darling? Miss Stephanie,
yes, I am.
Right. Something happens around that time. Absolutely. It's not just your body, which let's face it, that is a reality too. Our bodies, it gets harder physically to do this kind of work, but the nature of our lives changes around this time. Even though our children are now usually like young adults, that doesn't fucking mean that they don't need you. Every single one of us are parenting young adults. And hello, how many of us are living the life of Riley, lying around not caring about our kids? It is just as emotionally fraught with worry and neediness as it was when they were little. But this time it's different. It's emotional neediness. It is not, because when I had three little kids all the time, physically I was tired and physically it was demanding. I was breastfeeding, I was doing this, I was doing that, whatever. Now it's different. And our job is emotional support. Our job, most of it, I would say, is emotional support. And the emotional demands that we have on our lives now is greater, I would say, than when our kids were little. So when you're like in that late 40s, early 50s stage, your life is changing. Maybe you have older parents, right? Think about the emotional toll of caring for the elderlies in your life, caring for your teenagers and your young adults in your life. It's a far more emotional burden. And then we've got clients crying because postpartum, they're having a hard time. And now we have to give to them that It is harder to do that now, I think, than just being physically capable, physically able to manage. It's not the same thing. And that it shows up more when we're this age, that hard emotional work, because you've only got so much space. We do emotional support for a living. Then we have emotional requirements in our own lives, and you've got to carry all of that. And it gets really heavy around this age. Mm. Yeah. So welcome to 50, Steph. We can still eat cake on this side. There's still cake, but there's a bunch of other stuff too. Yeah. Yeah.
So age is definitely a factor. Age is a factor, but I'm going to say, anyone who wants to talk about, you know, your caseload, the very first thing you need to talk about, yeah, is network with somebody, find someone who is in your training class, who wants to work backup, or even who wants to work in a collective or a, it can be a backup situation. It can be in a partnership situation. I recently heard there was three doulas in the States who have, as opposed to each one of them taking a turn where one's on call 1 week, one's off call, there's actually one on call, one running backup, and one on, and one off. And they run it that way so that, and they take a heavier caseload, obviously, but it's actually a threesome of people, so that the person who's on call always has a backup, and the person who is off can be off, because it's very unlikely that you get three people going into labor at the same time, even with their heavier caseload. So, and they're two of them are educators as well. They teach. One of them is a birth doula only. So they're able to take a little less in birth doula fees because they are teaching classes as well, which I thought was fascinating, as opposed to some of the people who work in partnership, like they all go to the interviews together and stuff, and then one's on, one's off. It's a threesome, and I thought, well, that's fascinating too.
Yeah, that sounds like a collective.
Yeah, it's like a collective, and that can be even larger. People can make that larger if they want, you know. But I liked that three-person roundup. Someone can be actually off for a week and actually plan things and actually go do things, and without the sensation in your body of being on call.
Yes. And if you know in advance that you're going to be on call for like the, I don't know if they do it monthly or whatever, but let's say you know you're going to be on call for the entire month of October, then you can plan accordingly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I like that. Yes.
So always start your load planning with who you're going to work with, how you're going to work. Backup system.
It is hard, especially when you're a newer doula, when you have the opportunity to take another client, to say no to that. When your client load is full and some other opportunity comes up, turning that away is hard. Mm-hmm. It's a pragmatic decision to say, I'm sorry, all my parameters are filled right to the limit and I can't squeeze in another thing. Yeah. That's a life lesson. Know when your client load in your life, you have three children, maybe a partner, that's it. That's my client load. I can't take on your problems too, my neighbor, friend, coworker, whatever. Know when your client load is full and stick to it. Know your limit and work within it.
That's it.
I'm a fucking queen of analogies. So... anything else you got to say about client load? What are we doing on time? How good are we?
We're good. We can
just over an hour.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, what I wanted to say, I mean, it all kind of ties it up. Have you ever been in a place where your client load was too high? And did you ever run into any problems? Because you ignored the rule of know your limit, work within it, and went ahead and took that extra client, and then something fucked up happened. Anybody have anything happen like that? I did. I had a story.
Kim, you look like you're thinking hard.
Well, no, because I mean, I've certainly had clients go at the same time, but it wasn't because I had a high client load. I mean, I was only taking like two clients a month. I don't think, oh no. So, well, no, nothing fucked up actually. Like just before the pandemic, I had like six fucking clients in 1 month. But it all worked out. So
yeah,
it also is what led me, thank God there was a pandemic. I don't have to do this anymore. Because the bursts themselves were fairly traumatic. But yeah, no, I had six. The last client load I really had was six, and it all worked out.
So two things that happened to me, this absolutely was because I was carrying too many clients, and I did what I just told everybody not to do. Couldn't resist taking on that one extra client because it was too good an opportunity not to. And another time I did it, it was because it was like a friend of a friend's daughter or something like that. And I just couldn't feel like I could say no. So the two occasions I had too many clients and I could manage. And one thing that happened was I went to the wrong client's house for prenatal.
Oh shit.
I can just completely, you know, wrote like prenatal number one with Marie, 7 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. Had food and everything. I had that person in my head the whole day, the wrong person.
Oh, no.
In my head. So opened my file, saw her name, address, blah, blah, blah. Yep, yep, yep. That's where I'm going. Get to their house and she opens the door looking at me like,
why are you here?
Yeah. What's going on? And as soon as I saw her face, I knew, I did not. And of course the other person lived like way far away. Oh. So then I had to call and apologize and make my way over there. So that was one thing that happened. And another time I was on my way to the wrong hospital. I didn't get to the wrong hospital, but I was on my way to St. Mike's because it was I was just like, you know, so many clients floating around in my head. And it wasn't that I necessarily was thinking about a different client. I just was.
You were in so autopilot.
I was on autopilot. And my default is to get off at Richmond and go down to St. Mike's. And I did. I got off at Richmond. But then by the time I got to Parliament, I'm like, fuck, where am I going? This isn't the way to Sinai.
Oh shit.
What am I doing? And the reason why I was so frazzled is because I had too many clients and it was just, and back when I used to do paperwork, used to keep paper client files. I would sit down maybe like once every 2 months and have to reorganize everything because there'd just be too much. And I'd just like shove everything in like one file and then have to redo it. So I'm not a naturally organized person. So a little bit of overwhelm really fucks me up. So can't do it. Now I know. I got to really pay attention to that.
Wow.
How about you, Steph? Have you ever overloaded yourself and then?
I happened to overload myself. Well, I was overloaded when Roger had to sit down with me about the load that I was carrying, the load he was carrying, how it was impacting our family, how it was impacting our marriage. And
you know what? Let me just interrupt you here. That conversation, if my ex-husband had had that conversation with me, we might still be married.
Yes. Yeah.
Your husband is so
awesome.
Emotionally mature.
Yeah. It's true. The fact that he even sees that, you know what, it looks like Steph is, that he feels the weight, the overweight of what you were both carrying. And then he had the emotional maturity and the trust in your relationship to talk to you about it. It's a big thing, Steph. It's a big
wow.
thing. Okay. This is the We Love Roger podcast. Thanks for listening.
So he had to sit down, and even though he had to sit down with me, I initially took it poorly that, again, these are other shit, other baggage from my past life, not being also coming from a person who was for many years raised by a single parent who you just do your shit and everyone else gets out of the way. Roger didn't do well. He didn't wasn't raised in a family where you do your shit and get out of the way. You're collaborative at all times. So his request to collaborate with me was met with resistance and aggression. And
aggression?
Oh my God.
I know. I don't know how this
happened. You ever lay a hand on Roger? I swear to God.
And all your friends are probably sitting there going, are you fucking kidding? He is a god among men. What is wrong with you?
Okay. Also, I would like to say he should not have brought this to me when I had scissors in my hand, okay? I didn't mean to hit him with the scissors. I was pointing vigorously and they flew out of my hand and hit him, okay? He came to me when I had scissors in my hand and I started railing.
Sorry, are you... You're looking for us to go, oh, that's okay then. No,
he's still married to you.
Anyhow, at that moment, I decided to that actually caused me to feel rebellious, and I took an extra client on top of the already load. And that client,
out of spite, you took a client out of spite.
I did, and that
Jesus
client,
woman,
nearly cracked me. It made me sweat. She made me work.
Good. In Jamaica, we would say, oh, good. That means good for you. Good for you. That's what happens.
You went looking for trouble and you bought it.
Yeah.
Before
you quit shopping for trouble.
Before I even made it to the month she was due, I was 3 weeks into working with this person after taking that person on out of spite, out of irritation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck, okay, I gotta rejig here. I gotta go tell Roger it was the dick move. And I, again, very honestly, that's how I came back to him. I'm like, okay, I know I did not react well. I know I was defensive. I know it was a dick move to shut you down the way I shut you down. I'm ready to sit down and talk about it. But it was my own spite move that, and of course I still had months more with this person, but yeah, that's how it, that was really,
yeah,
that was really the turnaround. And when I came back and said these things to him, he was not as receptive either. And he's like, yeah, that was a dick move. That was absolutely unacceptable. I don't know who you're fighting with because I'm not here to fight with you. I'm here for us to figure out some stuff for our family. And here's what I need from you. And then he laid down what he needs from me. And I said, okay, here's what I need from you. And he's like, I don't even know that I want to say yes to that now because
I'm
feeling defensive. And yeah. So eventually we figured it out. My client load would move from 4 to 5 a month to 2 to 3 a month. And then eventually I started feeling that. And I thought actually 2, because the kids were really coming into an active time with their activities. And I was able to take on more breastfeeding support roles. And I was able to make other things work that actually did make me happier. So it was my husband trying to rein me in, seeing that I was tired and exhausted and not able to do the things I wanted to do, that actually made me go harder and then fuck myself over. So here I am.
So the universe was on Roger's side. Said, okay, bitch, you're going to be like that. Here's Mary. She is high maintenance and she's going to make your life a living hell.
Mm-hmm.
She wants
enjoy.
She wants to hire you. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And you went, yes, let's have this. Oh, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
God, that's hilarious.
Well, I think this has been an important conversation. I really do.
Yeah.
Because we all need a reminder. If you don't have Roger.
If you don't have a Roger.
Don't have a Roger. Pay attention to your body. Pay attention to your mental health. Look around you in your life. Is everybody crying? Maybe it's time to rethink your client load.
Yeah.
Is everybody crying? Even the cats. Everybody's miserable and upset. It might be a time to reevaluate what you're doing. And if you are a brand new doula, remember, know your limit, work within it, consider all those factors. And I mean, it's different for a doula who doesn't have a partner, doesn't have children, it's different. You can have more, look at your life and see what the balance, what that balance feels like for you, and then go for it. Otherwise, you know, don't try to stuff another client in there. Don't be the slimy doula. Don't take clients out of spite. It's not nice for anybody. And it's going to come back and bite your ass, right, Stephanie?
Because your family might not be as, generous and understanding as Roger is.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not.
It might be more like mine.
Well, I will remind you that this morning I told him I had a dream about him deciding he wanted to date somebody else within our marriage because it was practical because I was too busy. And his response to that was not, I would never cheat on you because I love you so much. It was very pragmatic. It was, I don't have time for a side chick. And I let him know that that was the wrong answer.
Yeah.
Because there's, those bastards can always find time.
There's time.
Yeah. There's always time. See, that's how you know Roger's a good guy, because he doesn't even know like the underground fine print rules that a lot of men look at. There's always time.
Yep.
You can always find time for a side chick, dude. So Roger's a really good guy. Like he doesn't even, so you got to give him some of that credit too, Steph. We're never going to join you in beating up Roger. Roger's a good guy because it doesn't even occur to him that yes, there is always fucking time for a side chick. There is. Men find it. Busier men than him have found time for a side chick.
100%.
So the fact that Roger's like, I don't even know where would I put her. That's good. That's good. Yes.
Do you see my schedule? Where would she go?
This jam-packed. Yeah.
Oh God, that's so funny.
Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. Appreciate you guys. You always give me something to think about and always help me learn something that I didn't know before, even though I think I know everything. And you always let me know. No, you don't.
Keeping me grounded.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to go get ready for a doctor's appointment. What do you got going for the rest of this Friday? Also, it fucking rained. It did not say it was going to rain, and it did.
I know. I got to go empty out my trash cans now at the foot of the driveway that are now probably full of water.
Yeah. And every time I see skies darken, I start to get anxiety because of my stupid basement is not secure and it won't be until next week. So, yeah. So what are you doing for the rest of the week, for the rest of the day, Steph?
Right now I am going to Scarborough to pick up one of my children and drop another one off. They're taking time with their Nana.
Nice.
That's lovely.
Yes. I'm going to spend some time with my now clean dogs.
Excellent. And we are still looking for doulas to highlight at the end. So if you are a doula that would like to be highlighted by us at the end of the podcast, last week we did Sam, just gave her a little shout out. I don't really have anybody for this week. But yeah, shoot us an email at thepragmaticdoulas@gmail.com and we will tell us who you are and what you're about, and we'll throw you out there and maybe get you some more followers and shit.
That's right. Big yourself up so that we can big you up even more.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about this little feature that we had decided to do, because I would have totally thought of somebody. And like I saw it written down and I was like, I can't remember what that means. But now I remember what that means. So I'll definitely try to think of somebody. Even if nobody writes in, I'll think of somebody to highlight. I'm sure nobody's going to be mad about us highlighting them without their permission. So
I hope not.
Yeah, we'll do that. Great. So,
and next week we will be talking about placenta encapsulation.
Yes.
Going to talk to us about that. So that'll be fun. You can tune in for that. Mm-hmm. Please remember to tell a friend. We would love some homework for you to tell one doula friend about us. And if they tell a friend and then you tell two friends and so on and so on. That was for anybody that wants to look that up. I'm sure YouTube has a 1970s video on, you know,
Breck the, shampoo.
Breck shampoo.
It was a Breck shampoo commercial. I was old enough to remember it very well.
Yes. I always wanted Breck shampoo. Anyways, so yeah, so remember to rate, remember to subscribe, and please remember to tell a friend.
Great. Have a very good week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.